special time of quarantine interviews. Rob's been just going around the internet going, hey, you have an interesting story and we want to just have some fun here. So Rob, set this one up for us.
So before I talk about what this gentleman is known for, I got to talk about how this is the most non-linear interview we've ever gotten. Because normally when I get a guest, I go to their social medias or emails and ask them directly. It's like, hey, can I interview you?
Yeah.
This one worked a little differently. I was watching a stream by a couple of guys, Zach Anner, Chris Damaris, and they were keeping people who were voting in the States company. And they started questioning each other about stuff. And one of the questions they asked each other was, when's the last time you cried? Now, Chris Damaris was in this interesting documentary called A Simple Walk into Mordor. So I asked him, did you cry when you reached Mount Doom? And he said, no. And then someone in the comments says, we almost did. I'm like, who's this gentleman? He's like, I want to sing We Are the Champions, but the guys weren't having it. And I'm like, were you the guy who kept them alive? And he's like, yeah, that's me. Can we talk with you on our little show here? Because I got some questions for you, bud. And yeah.
How do we keep Rob alive in the New Zealand wilderness? Because if anyone's going to figure out how to destroy themselves, that's probably going to be Rob.
Introducing our guest, Nicholas Newton. Nick, say hi.
Hi. Hello. How's it going?
It is going fantastic. It is so great to have you here. Thank you for not only saying yes, but saying yes in the weirdest of places.
Yeah, sure thing.
For our listeners that don't know, what was A Simple Walk to Mordor?
So 8 years ago, almost to the day, 8 years and a couple of days ago, myself and Chris Damaris and Kerry Shawcross of Rooster Teeth set out from the set of the Shire in New Zealand, and we walked all the way to the mountain that was used as Mount Doom in Lord of the Rings, obviously. And so, yeah, we tried to simply walk into Mordor from the Shire to see if one could do it.
Yeah, could one simply just walk there? And
it wasn't simple. No. It was very difficult.
Yeah, it's quite an impressive feat because it was set out over, like, we're going to do this in 6 days because we have a flight back to catch. So, and it's quite ambitious. I believe it was 120 miles. So,
yeah, about that.
Megan was brilliant enough to try to do the math for a point of reference here. So she figured it out. It would be a walk to Terrace Bay, Beardmore, or Attakoke, and from us. So just walking there over 6 days. Now, I assume that, like, how much planning went into, like, okay, we're going to have the trip here, and what had made them approach you to be their guide?
So earlier in 2012, I was working at a children's camp in the States, in California. And after I did that, I traveled around the States. I went to a few different places, and one of the places was Austin. And because I was a fan of Rooster Teeth, and I, you know, back in New Zealand, I'd been organizing events. I kind of still run it, not as much anymore. It's called Rooster Sheep. It's basically the fans of Rooster Teeth in New Zealand. Other people kind of handle more of that now, but I'm still like the founder and owner of it. Anywho, because I had that background, I sent Bernie an email and was like, hey, can I come by the studio and like meet you guys? Because, you know, I'm a big fan. And he's like, sure. And so I, that's when I ended up meeting Chris and Kerry. And I mentioned that I'd worked in film and stuff like that as well. And when I got back to New Zealand, I was only back there for about 4 or 5 days. And I got this email saying, hey, we're going to be doing some filming in New Zealand. Would you like to help us out? And that was from Chris. And I was like, sure. Like, who wouldn't want to? And he's like, okay, cool. Let's have a meeting. So this was in September. Yeah, so we had a Skype meeting, and that's basically where they told me that this was the walk they were planning to do. And they were horribly underprepared. They had no idea what they were going to be doing. Like, they basically just put it in Google Maps from one to the other and gone, yeah, we could do that. And
I was like, oh my gosh, no.
Yeah, sure, I guess. Yeah, and so we finished that meeting, and I went, oh my god, this is amazing, but they're going to die. So I took day to think about it, to be like, okay, you know, I'll actually think about, is this something I want to commit to doing? Because I knew what kind of trick this was going to be. And I went, nah, it'd be stupid not to jump on this opportunity. And so, yeah, I started doing my own research about where we could actually walk. So basically, pretty much the entire walk that you see was all planned by me. The very end of us actually climbing the mountain was their original plan. Everything else was my replan and saying, hey, I see what you guys have planned. How about we do this instead? And they shot down a few of my ideas. Like I wanted us to, you know, in true Lord of the Rings fashion, I wanted us to get some rowboats and like row across Lake Taupo.
Oh.
And Chris was like, no, no, we won't be doing that. And I tried to pitch the idea of maybe jumping on horses because of like, you know, Shadowfax and, you know, Frodo being saved by Arwen. You know, across the river and stuff like that. But they're like, no, we can't ride horses. So it was just it was just sticking to the walk. But, you know, I found some really cool trails for us to do and much more interesting routes than just walking across the highway for 6.5 days.
Which made definitely for a like great filming experience and probably just an enjoyable experience, I'm sure. Like, it sounded like they just wanted the grandeur part of it. They didn't really understand the rest of the trek.
I think because we were all pretty young then, it's that thing where when you're young, you're just like, yeah, I can do it. It's great. It'll be fine. Like, Chris was the oldest of us at the point. I mean, he's still the oldest of us, but he was the oldest at 24. I was 23. Kerry was 22. So it's like, when you're in your early 20s, you can just go and do these things.
Yeah.
You also don't anticipate the toll that constant walking and hiking is going to take on your body.
Yeah. Oh, for actually, example. I do have a funny story about that. Is that, you know, I was actually pretty good condition because I've been working with children and I've been doing a lot of hiking in America. And then I went back home and I didn't have much work to do. So I was working at my parents' place, like helping them like clear up trees and stuff. So I was in pretty good shape and I did the whole world pretty easily in terms of the fitness. It was just the blisters that killed me. Then the day after the walk, like, so we finished on a Sunday. Yeah, I finished on a Sunday afternoon and I dropped them back at the airport at like 3 a.m. on the Monday. At 10 a.m. on Monday, my legs stopped working. I got back home and went to sleep and then I got up at like 10 a.m. and my legs collapsed beneath me. And I was supposed to go to work later that day because I'd only taken a roof off of a walk. And I just text my boss. I'm like, I'm not making it in today. Like, I can't even walk.
Sorry, legs don't work.
Yeah.
Because what you did in 6 days, I did the calculations on like an average day. I walk about 15,000 steps. So what you guys did in a week is what I would usually do in like 3 weeks at work. Like, you know, so that was actually really impressive. And I can only imagine the pain on your feet. Was that the worst pain you've ever experienced?
I mean, aside from like surgery, like I had some teeth out and that hurt. But yeah, probably the worst pain to my feet, aside from kicking the odd thing that I don't mean to. You know what actually makes it worse? I don't know if it's better or worse in terms of the fitness, was that, so, you know, you kind of see it a little bit in the film, but so their flight got delayed coming in. They were supposed to be on a flight that arrived at like 8 a.m. Their flight didn't end. They missed their flight thanks to Qantas. So yeah, blame Qantas for that. And they didn't end up getting in till like 1 p.m. And so then they got in and they had to deal with like rechanging bookings of things like that. And basically I got a message the night before from Kate Patillo, Jack's Patillo's wife Katie, who was hanging out with them in Australia, saying, hey, they've missed their flight, you know, can you call me? And so I had a quick call with her and she basically told me what was up. So I had to reschedule like the tour that we went on to start off. It was a guided tour of the Shire, and that was originally scheduled for like noon, but they weren't getting in until, you know, noon, 1 p.m. So I rescheduled it to be 4 p.m. So we did the tour. That took 1.5 hours. And then you can see it in one of the deleted scenes. We didn't immediately go from the tour to walking. We like, you know, tried to find some water because they didn't have any water on them for some reason. And so, yeah, we had to go find a hose for them to fill up all the drink bottles they'd bought. And then we started, we didn't actually start walking till like 7 p.m. of the actual proper walk of it. So that first day was just a bust. And we walked till like 1 a.m, but we barely made any progress because none of us really knew what we were doing. And that was also one of the only places I couldn't pre-plan where we were going. Like, I'd gone and asked all the farmers, can we walk across your land? Like, I'd looked, oh, we're starting here, we have to get to here on the river. So yeah. I basically just every farmer in between, I went about 2 weeks before I went to their houses, knocked on the door and said, hey, in a couple of weeks, I'm doing a trip. Can I walk through your land? I won't mess with any of your stock or anything like that. Chris turned me into a liar. And they're all like, yeah, that's good. And so, yeah, we walked about 1 a.m. and we barely did anything. So now we're down a day. And then the next day, we were supposed to get started at like 8. I don't think we started getting walking until, like, by the time we'd actually eaten breakfast and stuff, it was more like 10. And so every day we were just, you know, losing more and more ground. So the first few days we barely walked anywhere. And then we had to make all that up on days like, day 5 was our best day. And you, it's the, I don't want to keep bringing this up, but it's a good point of reference. It's the day when we first start popping our blisters. Because up until then, the blisters basically slowed us down. And my sister, Alex, who was kind of running support for us and bringing us extra food and taking away, like, because just a detour a bit here. As we went along, we're like, we don't need this. We don't need that. We don't need any, all the shit that we bought. You know, we went from having 3 big bags to 1 big bag and 2 little bags. So Alex was taking stuff away from us.
Yeah, I guess it let you travel a little lighter because you're realizing, okay, we're not using this stuff. I'm curious as well, because they had the hobbit feet the first couple of days. Do you think that contributed to the blisters as well?
Well, those actually just they wore over their tramping boots.
Oh, okay.
What contributed to the blisters was that they'd never worn their tramping boots before.
So they weren't broken in.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And I did something silly. I remember when we were walking around Anime North 1 year, I had told Rob to get better shoes. And he said, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it, Megan. I just bought new shoes. And he showed me, and he pulled them out of his bag. And they were Converse sneakers, a brand new pair of canvas Converse Chucks. And I just looked him dead in the face. And I was like, those are not convention shoes. Those are not good shoes.
Those aren't walking shoes,
Rob. And we were walking around Toronto, and he had some blisters on his feet. He was so upset, and I just kept looking at his shoes.
That's not why he was upset, but it definitely helped.
So you're telling like hikers that are maybe beginners is to like just wear your boots before going on a big long hike.
Yep. I did something dumb as well, though. I trained in my sneakers, like, all for the walk. I trained for, you know, basically since they told me I started walking, I trained 5 to 6 days a week training, just doing different levels of walks. And the hardest thing was is not running, because it's different muscles. So I had to just keep walking every day, which walking takes a long time.
Yeah.
And again, luckily I didn't have much work to do because I'd just gone back into the country. So I was just doing part-time work. Yeah. So I trained in these sneakers for 8 weeks. And then the day of, we started walking across farmland. I'm like, oh, can't really wear sneakers across farmland, that, you know, I'll step in a rabbit hole or something. And so I said to my dad, hey, can I borrow your tramping boots? And he said, yeah, sure. So I wore tramping boots for the very first day, which is what started out me getting blisters, because again, new shoes essentially. And then second day, I'm like, screw this, and switch back to my sneakers for the rest of the trip.
Kind of kneecapped yourself at the beginning.
Yeah.
What was the prep like for this? Like, had you done any sort of hiking, maybe not in this time frame, but like have you done like major lengths before this?
I hadn't done major lengths, but my dad and my stepmom at the time were big into walking and stuff. So through my teenage years, I've done a few tramps. Actually, where I grew up in Taupo in New Zealand, for camp through school, is when you're like 11, 12, they do it every other year, but they take 2 years of students. They basically take you to Mount Tongariro, Mount Ruapehu, and Mount Narahoe, which Mount Narahoe is Mount Doom, and you walk over Mount Tongariro, which is about average of an 8-hour walk. So a lot of the trail that we did on Simple Walk, I'd already done when I was 11 years old.
Oh,
and so
that's cool.
But then, yeah, for the training, when I first found out about it, I went and just climbed another mountain because it was there. And that was one that I'd done a bunch as a kid. It's a pretty easy one. It takes, you know, 2 hours up, 1 hour down kind of thing. So I just did that. And then, yeah, just every day I listened to so many podcasts. I just put podcasts in my ears and I'd just walk between 2 and 8 hours every single day.
So I do like taking my dog for a walk, because I like put audiobooks or podcasts or whatever on, and I'm just like, let's go.
Yeah. Yeah. I found so many new podcasts.
And you just found another new one.
Oh, yeah. Lord.
Well, actually, funnily enough, one of the podcasts I was listening to was Smodcast, and I see you're wearing a movie shirt right there.
Oh, yes. Yes, I am.
Yep.
So there, I rewatched everything, you know, just in preparation, and the first big question that struck my head is, when you guys had to cut through the farm to get to the location quicker, did the farmer ever find out and call you out on it, or are you still under that radar?
Okay, so there was a bit more that wasn't showing on film there, and it wasn't showing because, okay, I'm going to have to back up a little bit.
That's okay. That's so okay.
I keep getting ahead of myself and realizing I need to set things up better. Okay, so we're walking through the farmland. We know we're not supposed to be there. There's a big sign saying, do not enter here without permission. And it was one of those things where I didn't want to ask permission because I'd rather ask for forgiveness.
Yes.
Because if they told me no, that was another day that we didn't have to like go around. And so when we walked in there for the first, like, it was quite a long road going through there. And it wasn't just one farm. It was a bunch of different farms all with a shared road. And so that was the thing that I thought was going to get me away with it, because there were so many different farms, I could play ignorant about who I talked to. So we're walking through there for about an hour when we hear the guy on the motorbike. It's a quad bike, and he was just around the corner of where we're walking. We're walking around the road, and there's like a cliff up one side of it. And as we're coming around, this cow and its little calf is running away from us on the road and, you know, going at about the same pace we are. And it gets around the corner, and we hear the guy shout at it, and he's coming from the other direction. And so the cow, I guess, knowing that we're coming from behind it and he's in front of it, runs up the cliff. And so, you know, it was kind of a cutout cliff of the road. So it had like an easy incline on one side and then went sheer. And so just as we came around into his view, on his quad, he motored up that incline and was up there trying to get the cow to come down. So we basically walked below him, very reminiscent of when the hobbits are hiding from the Black Rider at the start of Fellowship. We're just walking
that
below
was
him.
Literally, that was the literally, like, that was the part that I was thinking of when you guys were the hiding. Nazgul. I was like, it's just like the movie.
We thought of it as well.
From the Nazgul.
And Kerry thought of it as well. So he pulled out the camera. And I'm like, No. Please let my lies work if you start filming this. So he put the camera, and I'm like,
this is called incriminating evidence.
I'm like, put the camera away. And and he stopped and he starts like packing it back up. I'm like, don't stop walking. Just like tuck it away, like, so it can't be seen. So
yeah.
I'm like, at any point, he's going to turn around and see us. Like, it is just luck that he hasn't seen us yet. And we keep walking, and he's still messing with the cow. And we're like, we go down a bit, down a hill, and we're now below, you know, sort of his horizon. And I'm like, we got away with it. We're good. And we walked for about another 20 minutes and we didn't hear him again. We're like, oh my God, this is so good. He must have seen us in the distance and gone, what are these jokers doing? And, you know, there's nowhere for us to go. And so, you know, we heard him coming for us like about 20 minutes later, just as we're entering sort of this tree area. And so we heard him. We're like, we don't think he's seen us yet. He's just coming back to do whatever. So that's why we ducked off the road. And we're like, head down. And like, he couldn't see us from the road. And I'm still got the camera on, and I hid the camera in the grass, as you can see from the thing. And then we heard him coming back. I'm like, okay, act casual, like, just pretend, like, you know, we go from doing this to like, oh yeah,
hey, how's it going?
Oh, hey man, what are you doing on this side of the woods? What's up?
Yeah. And like, he asked us if we knew where we were going, and we're like, yeah, we know exactly where we're going. We had no idea. And about and he never said, yes, you can go, like, it's all good. He just left. Like,
it's like, it's all not right. Like,
he bought our story or said, okay, be safe, or okay, just make sure you don't go here or whatever. He just left, and we're like, fuck it, book it.
So, but I mean, if you found three guys in the middle of nowhere just chilling, are you gonna stick around? You know, like, it's like, you know, who seems like a trustworthy guy right now? These three guys in the middle of nowhere ducking off into the bushes and acting.
Yep. And I said to them, as like, when he was coming back, I'm like, don't say anything. Let me do all the talking. Because I'm like, if he hears American accents, he's going to be like, okay, what's going on?
What's
here?
Going on? Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So after like he left, we booked it as fast as we could. And we get to a split in the road. And I looked at that. So I had a GPS where, again, 2 weeks beforehand, I'd gone and put GPS points throughout the trail. So I always knew that we're walking to the right one. But when I'd been doing this bit, because I couldn't go into this land, I had, you know, I'd put GPS points on both sides of where I thought we were going in and coming out, kind of thing. And I wasn't 100% sure where we were going to come out. And so I'd put a bunch of GPS points, and the closest one happened to be not where the road ended. It happened to be where someone's house was. And so we're walking towards this GPS point, and we just come across somebody's home, and we're like, oh no, oh no. So we had to backtrack. So again, we cost ourselves a bunch of time backtracking. And we climb this hill, and we're getting up there, and Chris and Kerry wanted to take breaks, and I was limiting them to like 2-minute breaks kind of thing. And I was like, okay, we can eat something, and then we've got to keep going. And then we get out of the farmland, and we're still in private property because, but a different private property. We were in a logging area where we go into that area and you can see all the cut down trees. We just wind up in this area that they'd recently just cut down all the pines to make wood. And so we couldn't stop there either. There was a point where there's a sign that says, if you pass this point, you know, you're on private property. So we knew when we'd be back on public property. And as soon as we got there, Chris and Kerry went to sleep for an hour.
And I'm wondering though, now I'm curious, like, I bet that farmer has like the same story, but from their perspective,
yeah.
Where they're just like, yeah, one time I was just, you know, hanging out with my cows and they were freaking out, and then they went, and then all of a sudden I saw these three dudes just walking into the bush, and then I approached them and they were just like, hey, how's it going? You want to come hang out with us? Like, I'm sure that farmer has like the same story, but from the opposite side that he tells to all of his friends.
He was obviously lying to me, but what we think, we talked about it afterwards, and what we think must have happened was he tossed up, is it worth my while to like escort them off the land? Because we'd been walking, you know, for a good hour and a half at this point. Like, is it worth his while to basically, you know, goose march us off the land? And we're about in the middle of the private property right now, where I think he just made the, you know, deduction, like, fuck it up. They haven't caused any harm yet. I'll just let them go on their way.
Don't want to know. You know,
it's a bigger problem if I try to deal with this.
Just some three weirdos like in the bushes dressed like hobbits. Like,
well, luckily at that point, most of the costumes had come off. Like, the longer we went, the more, you know, pieces fell off.
Do you think it would have been better if they like came across you just dressed as hobbits in the bush?
I honestly think that would have been worse. That would have been harder to explain.
She's like, hold on, I got this.
Yeah.
Those cloaks get hot. I'm sure that they would have helped you in that situation. He would have just looked over, you'd be like, huh, a rock.
So speaking of backtracking, mm-hmm. Did you ever like off camera yell at Chris and Kerry for losing the ring and you had to go back all that way?
No, I was actually kind of thankful for, well, not thankful that it happened, but thankful for the excuse to not walk because, you know,
I saw you, after I saw you with your blisters and then I saw you running, I was like, this guy is a legend. This guy right here is like powerhouse.
I'd been using the same muscles for walking for 3.5 days at this point. And so it was like, oh, I can go for a jog? This was almost as good as sitting down. It was nice to do something different. And I was the last one to find out about the ring being gone, as they were kind of quietly talking about themselves. Because I think Kerry just felt really embarrassed about it. And he's like, you know, I'm going to go back and get it. I'm like, what's going on? And Kerry's like, I left the ring back there. And I'm like, where'd you leave it? He's like, you know, last time we stopped to put on sunscreen. And I'm like, oh, okay. I know exactly where that is. And he's like, no, I'll go back and get it. And I'm like, I will be so much faster. And I didn't want Kerry to like use more energy. So I'm like, you guys take a rest. I'll go back and run it. And so I think internally I was saying, oh, you guys take a rest. But I was like, no, you stay here. I'll go. Like, I was very kind of aggressive about it. And I ran off. And from behind me, I hear Chris yelling at me, don't be a hero. It just looked like I was trying to save the day kind of thing. But it was literally just, I would rather they got a rest than I got a rest, because I knew I could push myself further.
Because that's like exactly what I was thinking, because like in those situations, it's either me or Andrew go and like run and get the item that was forgotten, or like go ask the question and just, hey, everyone, wait here. We'll be right back. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's what we do. And, you know, as opposed to it being like an excuse to relax, it's like, hey, no, it's just going to be easier if I do it, you know?
Yeah.
I have always stated I don't run. Like for like 15 years now, anybody's like, dude, you could run for it. I'm like,
And you're talking about using the different muscle groups, and I totally understand that, because after walking, I'm just like, okay, you know what? I'm going to use my glutes a little this time. You know, I'm tired.
Hats off to Kiri, though, as I ran the whole way back there. I get there, I find the ring, I pick it up, I turn around, and there's Kiri. Like, he's just run after me, and he kept up with me the entire way. As so, I think for him, it was just about, like, you know, right. I think, like, he was just embarrassed, and like he wanted to sort of prove that he could do it as well. And so he ran back, and I went to give him the ring, and he's like, "No, you keep it." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." And so I took it, and we jogged back together, and he slowed down, and I went ahead a bit, and I get back to Chris, and I'm like, you know, I went to go get it so Kerry wouldn't have to, but then he came. He's like, yeah, I know. It's anyway, like, let's just keep going kind of thing. And so I gave Chris the ring, and you can see it in the footage when Kerry gets back. Chris goes to give him the ring, and Kerry's just like, you keep it. Like, he felt like he didn't at this point. But again, with the being embarrassed about it, Kerry then picked up the biggest bag, the heaviest bag we had, put it over his shoulders, and just quickly marched off. And he was the fastest walker for the rest of the day. Like, it was he just felt so bad about delaying us.
Powered through.
What about what a champion? What a good one.
Yeah.
That's the credit where credit's due. Kerry, if you're listening, good job, man.
I have another story about the end of that day as well, if you guys want to hear it. Something
absolutely. We love stories.
Yes, please.
So that day, I presume you're all familiar with the Lord of the Rings films.
Yes. We've seen it once or twice, you know.
Yeah. So that day, we were walking towards a pub. Like, that was basically our end goal for the day, was this pub. And we were like, okay, we're going to get there. We don't even know if we're going to drink anything there, but it was just like, it was a goal. And we're like, we're going to get there, and we'll might at least buy some pints, and, you know, we'll cheers, you know, kind of like it's the Prancing Pony or the Green Dragon. Like, you know, we'll just have a good time. Like, we're hobbits celebrating for doing a good day's walk. And we're walking along, and it was possibly the toughest day. It was one of the hottest days. It was when our blisters were the worst. It was like, there was no nice scenery. It was just road. And so, you know, it was this really tough day. And but we had this goal, and that was what kept pushing us. And we walked past these road workers, and we said, hey, is the pub up around the corner, is it still open? And they go, oh yeah, no, they go pretty late. They basically go until the last person is still drinking. Like, they go until everyone has had their fill, kind of thing. And we're like, jealous. Oh, that's great. Yeah. And, you know, night came, and but we're still walking, and we know we're getting close, and then we see it, and we, you know, we're at the bottom of this hill, we climb up the hill, we get there, and it's closed. Ooh. And it was kind of like, this was our one goal for the day, and we didn't achieve it. And we just kind of sat there, like, just super depressed. Nobody said anything. We didn't even pull out the camera. And we just sat there depressed for a good 10 minutes before, I can't remember who, someone just said, hey, like, let's keep going. And it was just a really depressing way to end the day. And it's because we didn't film the end of it. I think we had mentioned it on camera that this is where we're going, but it just all got cut because it didn't make sense now that there was no resolution to the story beat. But it was kind of the lowest point of the entire thing. And it probably would have made great, you know,
drama
footage. Yeah, drama for the day. And it would have been a really good stopping point for the episode as like a cliffhanger, like of us just being super depressed. But you know, unfortunately,
it's hard
no one
to film
on
super depressed.
Yeah.
We need to head to our first break here, folks, but keep that dial locked to Thunder Geeks, brought to you by 102.7 FM, CILU, or around the world at iluradio.ca.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you have traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible, and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others. Encourage those who are sick or showing symptoms to self-isolate or to seek medical attention. As always, wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and practice good respiratory etiquette by covering your coughs and sneezes. Clean regularly used surfaces. COVID-19 symptoms can mimic colds and flu and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all. For up-to-date information, check reliable sources like your local health authority or the Public Health Agency of Canada.
CILU is supported in part by the students of Lakehead University, our sponsors, and our listeners. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
Copperfin Credit Union, Northwestern Ontario's largest locally owned credit union. Experience the convenience of their mobile banking app and online financial solutions anywhere, anytime. Copperfin Credit Union, life forward. Sarah Curtin, your neighborhood realtor. She's on top of what's happening in Thunder Bay's market, and she'll help you buy or sell your home. Call or text her anytime at 632-3635 or find her online at sarahcurtin.com. The Walleye, the definitive source for information on music, food, art, and entertainment in Thunder Bay. This month's issue is on stands for free now. Find it around town or online and interactive at thewalleye.ca.
Here on Thunder Geeks, we like to talk about mature things, like comic books and cartoons. And some of the music we listen to contains mature language as well, so listening discretion is advised.
One does not simply walk into Mordor. One does not simply walk into Mordor. One does not simply walk into Mordor. Except me, I walk in the front. Looking for the war chiefs, got an open bow for my enemies, and I sneak like a metal alert ninja. Eat some mushrooms when I'm injured, jump up, hang from the ledge when they walk by, drop down on their heads. All damn day I rescue slaves, chopping up the orcs with metro blades, death threats and legendary raids, finding artifacts hidden in the caves. Yes, from above I jumped and landed, running from your dome, and now you're branded. Let's kill this horde, chopping heads off with my ranger sword. One does not simply walk into Mordor. Except me, I'm riding on a Caligore. Hack and slash so fast, you're getting shanked. Walking tank, half human, half wraith. Tippy toe, sneaking up, then I brutalize. Go slow, elven bow, right between the eyes. Into the stronghold, poison all the grog. Drop a beast to the feet, hacking all the limbs off. Dropping meat for the beast that are up in the cage. Decapitating bodyguards, bringing the rage. I cruise, never making a sound. My ghouls are rising up from the ground. You fools are about to get wrecked. Blade to the face, dagger to the neck.
We're back. You're listening to Thunder Geeks, brought to you by 102.7 FM, CILU, or around the world at luradio.ca. That was Team Headkick with Walk into Mordor. Now back to the show.
Was there anything that you guys did that you forgot to film and you're like, oh man, that would have been amazing?
There was one thing that I only caught the end of on film, but again, didn't really make sense only having a little bit of it, and that was there was a fight. And I caught the very end of the fight. And you can kind of sort of see it in the footage. You can see the after the fight, how everyone's kind of like being a bit standoffish to everyone else. And it was basically, what day was it? Like day two or three is the time we would get lost in the woods, which we weren't really lost. We just weren't where we thought we were, which I suppose is the definition of lost, but it's a trail. That, you know, there's only one way you could go, and that's just keep on going forward. But anyway, it was that night, and there was a lot of steep hills on this one, and we get to one of them, and Carrie's like, hey, can I take a break? And Chris is like, oh, you know, we really should keep pushing. You know, it's getting late. We should keep pushing. And I guess Carrie had been getting a bit annoyed at Chris for taking breaks when he wanted to, and then shooting down every time Carrie asked. And then he just went, you know what? We always get to stop when you want to stop, but we never get to stop when I want to stop. And it's like, I'm just fed up with it kind of thing. And it was about, you know, maybe halfway through his sort of like speech that I like, because I pulled out the camera immediately, but then stupidly, I decided to focus before actually hitting record. Like if I'd hit record first, I would have probably got the whole thing, but I instead decided to, you know, get the focus first and make sure everyone was in frame and it was the right aperture and the right ISO and all that jazz. Then I finally hit record, and I forgot to turn on the mic as well, so it would have been all camera audio anyway. But, you know, it all happened just really quick. But the I talked to Chris about it afterwards, and he's like, the footage really just cast Carrie in a bad light because you didn't see the lead up to it.
The context,
only saw like his the confrontation. But yeah, the lead up to it was like Chris had been a bit sort of selfish. And so, you know, not intentionally.
Just perception. And also, there's going to be tension when you're walking that much and your feet are hurting. Yeah. And tensions are going to be, you're physically exhausted.
Yeah. It was more like Chris had been thinking more about the production and Carrie was just trying to get through the day. And so they were coming at it from two different places and I could see that. And but afterwards, you know, they you know, made up immediately and we took a break and Carrie's like, you know, sorry for blowing it up. And Chris is like, sorry for, you know, not thinking of other people. And you know, it was all good. But like, you can see in the footage at the end of that day that I think Chris has the camera and he's filming Carrie and Carrie's just like looking like this. For people who can't see me, just sort of head looking down and kind of a bit depressed. And Chris is like, you know, how are you feeling, Carrie? And Carrie's like, okay, I'm good. Can we just shut off the camera and keep walking though? And that was kind of the end of that.
Yeah. Were there points where you're worried about your guys' safety?
No, I don't think so. Not really in terms of safety. I suppose like going across other people's land. Chris got shocked, electrocuted. It was just funny more than anything. No, that does remind me. You can't really see, but the electric fence that Chris shocked himself on, like the other side of that fence is a pretty steep slope. So I went over first and I was like, hey, you know, watch out for these wires because these are the electric ones. And so I went over first and climbed down. And then Kerry came over and I took his weight as he came down because you kind of had to go down onto this really steep slope. And so, you know, he jumped off and went down and I took his weight to stop him from just keep on going down the hill. And then, you know, Chris had watched me do that with Kerry. And then I had my hands out to basically help him down as well. And, you know, we're like, okay, don't forget about the electric one. And then he gets shocked by the electric one. And I'm like, oh no, he's going to get shocked off the fence, which I've had done to me when I was young, you know, climbing over electric fences, kind of like Jurassic Park, you know. Sometimes if it's strong enough, it will actually sort of throw you off the fence a little bit. I'm like, oh no, if he gets thrown off the fence here and I don't catch him, he's just going to keep on going. Like, he's going to keep going down there. And so, but thankfully, because he'd watched, you know, Kerry go over and me had to take his weight, even though he got shocked, he held on to the fence. And so that was, you know, kudos to him to actually sort of thinking about it and not immediately just trying to jump off the thing.
You know, something about hearing people named Chris suffer brings me joy.
Hey, Rob, too bad you couldn't get a bubble tea while we were walking to where we were going.
I do.
He eventually got one, no, but we also had blisters and yelling. Blisters bring out the worst in everyone. But as Megan pointed out, it is in fact Rob's own fault for his canvas shoes and not mine.
Andrew, can you remind me of the phone?
Well, New Zealand, New Zealand, as I understand, though, like there's no animals to really worry about because here we'll have like moose and deer as well as the carnivores of like, you know, bears and wolves. Where if you go camping and such, there's some precaution to take.
It's a good chance to die.
Yeah, no, we were. I mean, maybe if we got into the wrong paddock and there was a bull in there that was kind of angry, but apart from that, we're completely safe from wildlife.
How many times did you have to tell Chris to stop bugging the animals?
He did ask the very first time if he could do it, and I'm like, okay, yeah, you can do it. Like, it'll be funny footage. And then you can actually hear me on the very last time he does it go, okay, we've scared the cows enough, because, you know, I'd asked all these farmers knew who I was. And they, so like, they'd been really gracious to us. So I didn't want them to be like, hey, it's off.
Awesome. Ooh. That's really cool. Yeah. You had mentioned at the beginning that you were already involved with film before. So you have a history in film.
Yes, I am a video editor.
Awesome. Ooh. That's really cool.
Anything you want to plug? What have you worked on so far?
Oh my god.
Feel free.
Well, a quick history. I did film school, so I did a lot of short films in that. Films since then, I worked on one called Blue Mermaid, which I was in as well, but then got cut out of, which was my own decision, being the editor. and I was horribly like bleach blonde in that one. which, you know, if you stole my hair, it was really horrible. A film I'm actually quite proud of was called Licorice Dream. That was back in 2010, 2011 era. That deals with addiction. So, you know, your classic sort of short film, you know, trying to tell a message.
Beautiful time.
Yeah. It was a combination of liquor and nicotine. and I worked on a feature film that never ended up coming out, because the last I heard it was that one of the lead actors threw up a hissy fit and didn't want it coming out, or someone on the cast or crew basically refused to sign the contract, so it's basically just gone into limbo. I cut it in 2013 and it's never come out, so it's quite annoyed about that, because it was going to be my first feature film.
Yeah, that's kind of sad,
especially since you worked so hard on it.
I was actually quite proud of a lot of the cutting I was doing on there as well. And I don't know how much I can go into with it, but I, for it, there was sickly between technology and drugs and stuff like that. People can appear as other people in this film. Mm-hmm. And so the way they've done it is they've just done it as though it was to be cut between like the person who it actually was and then what the other person's seeing, kind of thing. But I'm like, no, I want to make it way cooler than that. So I researched how they did the T-1000 effect on Terminator 2.
Yeah.
So I researched all of that and then went and recreated the same effect for when it was going between like who the protagonist was seeing and who they actually were. Like, I actually had the morph on their face. So I was really proud of that. And then for the special effects for that one, I was trying to find like this cool morphing sound and I couldn't find one that I really liked. And so I ended up I grabbed my mic and I went really close to my mic and I just made a noise with my mouth. I can't even remember what it was. like just this weird noise with my mouth into the microphone. And then I applied a bunch of effects to it and I made this really cool morphing sound. And so that's kind of the thing I'm most disappointed of it never coming out, was just those little things of
like, you know, that burst of creativity.
Yeah. The things that I put into the film and was sort of my hand in it.
I love it. And as someone who's had, I know it's much smaller scale, but someone who's had to do all of our videos, I have gained a new appreciation for professional editors, because my little crummy stuff mentally exhausts me. So with what you do, I can't imagine.
It's definitely something that just takes over and you just kind of like zone into it. It's so fantastic. I love that feeling. Yeah. Some other just random little question I had was, so day four, you're wearing a shirt and it says, yeah, nah, shot, bro. What?
Yeah.
Is that?
That, my friend, is Kiwiana.
Kiwiana.
Okay, right. So you know how you guys are Canucks?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
The people from New Zealand are called Kiwis, which is based off of our national bird. So, Kiwi. Kiwiana is basically things that are uniquely New Zealand. So, the buzzy bee, LMP, none of your audience is going to understand what I'm talking about right now. But that's okay.
That's okay.
Yeah. Pavlova, Australia, we invented it. Screw you, Australia, we invented it. I will go to my grave claiming that. Anyhow, the way when New Zealanders answer a question with yes, we won't say yes or no. If we want to say yes, instead we'll go, oh yeah, nah, yeah. If we want to say no, we'll go, oh yeah, nah,
Yeah, no.
And if we want to
say... Oh, we know that.
Oh, yeah, but for sure.
I really agree. We'll go, definitely.
We've had this operating theory. You're actually the second key we've spoken to. I think we spoke with Hayden about a month ago. He's an independent filmmaker from New Zealand, where we have this sort of kinship as Canadians with New Zealanders because we grow up in with this large force that's really close to us, and we're just kind of over here being happy and more mellow. grow up in the shadow of another country. Yeah. But we have that same sort of vernacular. Where the way we'll answer questions, and it's been going around, it's like, yes, no, for sure.
I used to work on the studio show called And the Crowd Goes Wild, which is like a kind of a sports recap studio show. And they actually had a segment on that called Yeah, Nah, Definitely. And it was for all the times during the week where, like, you know, athletes after rugby games or whatever, when they were asked a question, would always start it with, oh, yeah, nah, or yeah, nah, definitely. And so it was just every week they had this thing because it was a combination of, they just had a highlight reel of them just saying this.
That's beautiful.
I'm loving that was what it was, because I had thought maybe it was in regards to that, but just solidifying it is perfect. I'm so glad to know that. Thank you for explaining that to me.
The second part of it, the shop bro, is just shop bro basically just means good job in New Zealand. So it's, oh, shop bro. It just means you did a really good job. And so the yeah, nah, shop bro, it also had a shot glass in like, the word. I think the O in shot was a shot glass.
Oh, yeah, no shot bro.
I feel like that's a shirt you need, Kyle.
Say there's some Canadians that wanted to go camping in New Zealand. They have some experience camping, but what would they need to know to go tramp around New Zealand?
You're all good.
Just go for it.
It doesn't really.
Yeah, because I mean, up in Northern Ontario, if you have food on you, if you're gonna go to bed, you want to go tied up in a tree first, because animals, you're gonna have a bear. They're gonna wake up in your tent and. Not a fun time.
I beg to differ.
I slept on a bag of sausages as a pillow when I was a teenager. When I was up camping. They were our breakfast.
It's not a good idea here.
No. That's a wolf's delight. It's like, ooh, that's, I get a side dish.
Seasoning the meal. Seasoning, getting it ready.
Because here in Canada, we kind of have restrictions. Like, there's a lot of things. It's like, no, you can't camp here. You know, if you're going to camp on Crown land, you have to only be there for like 20 days, and then you have to move your campsite like this many feet in a different direction. So is New Zealand more like restrictive like that, or no?
I think you're supposed to pay fees, but we were only there for a night each time, so we didn't. In fact, a couple of the times we just camped on the side of the road. Well, there's one time that where can I start this? So I'm not speaking for a half hour about this one thing.
Talk about a half hour
for it. We love stories.
Okay. So day five was our best day. Like I was saying before, it was the one day that we popped our blisters. Because, like I was saying before, Alex was like, hey, yeah, you guys should be popping your blisters. Why have you not been doing that? As long as you clean them, they'll be fine. So we walked over a marathon that one day. We'd made up all the space, all the time that we'd stopped early the days before. We'd made it all up in one day and then some. The reason it was and then some was because my sister didn't bother looking at the map that I gave her about where we were going to be going. So she got to the end of the road, and if you go left, it's the way that the road goes to Mount Doom. If you go right, it goes to the farmland where we were going to be walking over the next day. And it was on the map that I'd printed out saying, hey, this is where we're going. Not only that, I'd also given her one of like my GPS for my car and said, this has our entire route programmed into it. So if you ever lose us, just drive the route and you'll find us. Instead of doing either of those things, when she got to the end of the road where it was left or right, she rang my mum and said, hey, I got to the end of the road and I can't find where Nick is. And which way do you think he would have gone? And my mum goes, well, if he's going to Narahoe, he would have gone left. So she turned left and we had gone right. And so, this was the one day, the only day that we dropped almost everything with her. We didn't, it was the one day I didn't have emergency food. It was the one day I didn't have emergency cooking supplies. It was the one day I didn't have emergency warm blankets or anything. We just had the clothes on our back and lunch that was and water. That's all we had with us. And now it's getting dark. We can't stop because it's going to get cold. So we just decided to keep walking to keep warm. So now we're getting further and further away from where our last campsite was supposed to be. Luckily, or unluckily, depending on your view of it, there was a car crash that happened just up the road from where we were. And all these cops started passing us. And almost every single cop slowed down and was like, what are you guys doing? And we're like, oh, we're just walking. We were on a tramp. And I'm like, okay. And I had a cell phone, but I had no reception where we were. And so when finally, like, the fourth or fifth cop stopped and was like, what are you guys doing? I'm like, do you have a working cell phone that I could please use? Because, you know, my sister was supposed to meet us when we came out of the bush. We hadn't come out of the bush. I was just lying to make a reason why we were there.
Yeah.
He's like, my cell phone doesn't work here, but I can drive you to where it does work. So I left Chris and Kerry sitting on the side of the road and I jumped into the cop car and he drove me up to this lookout place. And we get there. I even had to climb up like a tower thing. That's just, you go up there to look out over all the nice New Zealand bush. Climbed up there and I was able to get one bar. And I called my mum. My stepdad answered and I said, hey, where's Alex? And he says, what do you mean? Where are you? And I'm like, where we were supposed to be, we are, and I think it was like State Highway 47. I'm like, we're about 10 kilometers up State Highway 47. And he's like, okay, cool. I'll message Alex and I'll get her to come find you. I'm like, okay, cool. So I go back down, I get in the cop car. Pop drives me back. And as we pull up, there's another car now pulled over to the side. And the car's still got its lights on. So I get out of the cop car and I'm looking into these headlights. And Chris and Kerry are sitting off to the side. And there's a person there. And I'm like, hello? Okay, now I'm going to backtrack a little bit to tell you Chris and Kerry's side of the story, which they told me afterwards.
Okay.
So I just left the cop car. They're sitting on the side of the road in a country they don't know. And the car drives past them real slowly. And they're like, okay, that was weird. And then the car does a U-turn and comes back and drives past them real slowly again. And then pulls off to the side of the road. And a voice comes out of the car, hey, are you guys American? And they're like, oh my God, what do they do to Americans there?
And they're like, this is it, boys.
Yeah. And the voice is like, do you know someone named Nick? And they're like, yeah. And it turned out it was my, at the time, girlfriend who had come down to like surprise us. So like, you know, she had a day off work or whatever and come down to like, be like, hey, surprise, I'm here kind of thing. And the only reason she found us was because she had gotten lost. She'd gotten separated from my sister and was trying to find my sister again. And they'd gotten separated. And she just happened to come across Chris and Kerry sitting on the side of the road without me. So she's freaking out. They're freaking out. I get back there and I didn't recognize her voice. I'm like, who's this? Like, I hadn't heard her in 5 or 6 days. And then the cop's like, what's going on? I'm like, oh, it's my girlfriend. And the cop's like, okay, so you're good, cool. And he took off. Then so I put a mark on the GPS of where we were and we all jumped into my girlfriend at the time car and she started driving us back to where she last saw Alex. She drives us back down the hill and we go back into reception. Her phone lights up and it's a message from my mum saying, now just to remind you guys in case you forgot, I said to them, I'm 10 kilometers up State Highway 47. The text comes through from my mum saying, hey, Nick and the boys are 10 kilometers up State Highway 36.
Oh, no.
But at least now we know where my sister is because she's been, like, given these directions of where we're supposed to be. So we drive where this message says that we were supposed to be. We come across her, and she's like, where have you been? I'm like, where have we been? Where were we supposed to be? Where the hell have you been? And she's like, oh, I went this way. I'm like, didn't you look at the map I gave you? She's like, I'm like, didn't you use the GPS I gave you? And she's like, no, I just called mum. I'm like, why would she know?
Of all the people.
Lost in New Zealand.
Anyway, we as a convoy drive back to where the cop left us, like where I'd marked the GPS point. Luckily I had the GPS on me, so you know they could drive us back exactly where we were. We get out and the my sister's got food for us and so we eat it and the boys go and set up a tent. This is the first day they're setting it up without me, or at least without me giving some advice. And they set it up so that it opened right onto an electric fence. There was a long way of saying that, basically, is that I was still eating food, like catching up with my ex-girlfriend. And they set it up so the opening went right against where this wire was, right at face level. So as you crawled out, you were face to face. You basically had to duck around this electric fence. And they came back like, oh, we set up the tent. I'm like, yeah. They're like, yeah, it's right next to electric fence and we can't be bothered moving it. So we're just going to deal with that for tonight.
I mean, at just least mind set up the tent.
Just mind the shocky bit.
That's a great way to wake up in the morning, though. Like, what's better than coffee? An electric shock? Come on.
Straight to your eyes. It's fine.
I meet your mother.
Kyle just comes in the morning. Hey, Robert, wake up.
Big taser to the temple.
So knowing what you know now, was there anything that you would approach differently or change about either like your route or your preparation?
Take longer to do it. Just more days. The time, I suppose, it was a little bit arbitrary, but not really, in the sense that it started after they finished with PAX Australia, I think was the convention they were at before that. So it had to be after that. The Hobbit was coming out in like 2 weeks and they needed enough time to like cut the show.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we had very limited time to do it. And Chris was editing first day back in America, like to get it out on time. And so we were really just constrained by the time. And the that day that I was talking about where we finished and we're just really depressed, they were talking about like, okay, do we call up, you know, our travel agent and be like, hey, we need another couple of days to do this? Or do we like jump in a car and like drive to the end? Like if we can't make it, do we drive the last like couple of hours? And, you know, we actually had those discussions. And then after day five, where we made up all that space, we were like, it was the first day that we were like, we can probably do this. Every day up until then, it wasn't about can we finish? It was about how close can we get? Like how far can we make it before we give up? But after that day five, it was, oh, we can actually do this and we can finish this thing. And that was really inspiring. And that was also the first day that they saw the mountain and saw how close we were to it.
You actually can see your goal. So it, you know, gives that extra push to walk a little faster, walk a little farther.
Yeah.
Because now you can see it getting closer. It's less abstract.
Turns out it wasn't the mountain.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was, but that was the good part. I think it was the next day we actually saw the one.
When you were approaching those mountains, because there was always the danger of one of them erupting or something. Yeah. Was that like really heavy, like something to think about? Like, was that scary for you guys or?
It was, you know, we'd heard. So we got all our news based on people that we met along the walk. Like, because we don't show a lot of people that we met, but we did run into people like, you know, people doing walks themselves or passing. Like we passed a few people that, you know, we're just at their home or at their work or whatever, and they saw these guys just walking along being like, hey, what are you guys up to kind of thing. There also happened to be, there's a cycle competition called Round the Lake that happens every year. It's a 160 kilometer bike around Lake Taupo. So it didn't start when we were walking, but there are some guys that are insane and decide to ride around like two or three times. And so they start a few days earlier. They like cycle for days and those guys were passing us. So this is how we were getting all our news. That and Alex giving us sort of updates at the end of the day kind of thing. And that people were like giving us steady updates about the, first it was, they think Ruapehu's going to erupt. And then it was, okay, Ruapehu didn't erupt, but Tongariro, the one that we're actually going to be walking on, because you can't really see with the film, the geography of the mountains is that Tongariro and Narahoe kind of intersect. And so we actually start out climbing Tongariro and then transition onto Narahoe kind of where they meet. And that's kind of in the show, if you watch it again, it's where we kind of leave the trails and are just walking on mountain. That's kind of where we go from one to the other. So, you know, when we find out, oh, it's Tongariro's exploded, that made it a bit more real. But then we found out, oh, it's just a hydro explosion and it's on the other side. So we're like, you know what, we think it's fine. You know, not our favorite thing to do, but
it's just a volcano. Okay. It's
what's a hydro explosion?
Yeah, actually I don't know what that is either.
Explosion of water.
Geyser?
So there's
it's yeah, like a geyser?
We have no volcanoes near us, so we've never.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, we got nothing like that, so I've never heard what a hydro explosion is in regards to a volcano. I was like, that sounds just as bad.
Excuse me, fellas, but Yellowstone Park has
geysers. That's not near us, though. I've never seen a volcano in real life. I mean,
we have like a 6 foot mountain outside.
It's not even technically a mountain.
It's a geyser, because geysers go all the time.
Mm-hmm.
This is just basically the water on top of the volcanic activity. The volcanic activity happens below, and it just pushes the water out, essentially. So it's just a one-time thing, not a constant thing.
That's like even more rare.
Yeah, it's kind of a symbol of other things to come. So it could have been a sign that the mountain was going to properly explode. And so that's why they locked it all down. And that's why we had to get up at 3:30 in the morning to get there before there were any guards.
Yep. You guys took a lot of risks, and it was actually really thrilling to watch. And one of the questions that I had was like, is this like a common thing for people to do? Like, do lots of people try to do this, or is this just like a silly thing that you had decided, or they had decided to do?
As far as I know, we were the first. We were not the last, because some people followed in our footsteps. I think they were a couple of Swedish guys or Swiss guys, I can't remember exactly, but they saw our trip and decided to recreate it. But they took like 10 days, because he contacted me very soon after it came out and said, hey, I want to do this, how do I do it? So I gave him all the advice, all the lessons that we learned. And as I said earlier, the main lesson was take more time. And they took more time and more water and more food. And hats off to them, because they didn't have my sister running support for them either. So, you know, it was way more tough for them. But they put their stuff up on YouTube as well. I believe it was called My Simple Walk into Mordor. And so, you know, if you're interested,
yeah,
they do it as well. And it'll just show you more of the actual route as well.
Oh, that's cool.
So this is a question I actually got from my sister after watching your documentary. She doesn't see things normally. She saw Chris got constipated, so her first question was, what'd you guys eat?
We had a lot of carb-heavy dishes. My mum was doing most of the cooking. So it was, you know, I remember the first night she brought us out a full lasagna, you know, in a big tin dish, and we just ate it on the side of the road.
Oh, right.
Actually, this is funny. She also, for day two, had given me, the night before, she'd given me some bacon and eggs, because she knew I had a little cooker and I had a little pot. So she just gave me bacon, egg, like hamburger buns to put it in and basically have like bacon and egg sandwiches for breakfast. She did not give me any utensils or any like tongs or a spatula or anything like that, and which led to, in the show, you can see that I'm using a trowel, which was to dig holes to get in. All I had to clean it was with hand sanitizer, so I just used the hand sanitizer and cleaned it as best I could. And I think I used like one of my shirts and like knocked off as much dirt as I could. And yeah, used that. And then the next time I saw her, I was like, hey, you didn't give us any like things, like any utensils or anything like that. She's like, yeah, well, then you didn't have to like clean them or carry them or anything like that. I'm like, yeah, but how was I supposed to get the eggs out of the pot? And she's like, oh my god, I didn't even think about that. Because the bacon, I could use my fingers, like I could use my fingers to move the bacon around, but the eggs, I was just out of luck.
Yeah, exactly. Just like grab them, because it'll just fall apart, you know.
The bacon I did first and put to the side, and then I just chucked all the eggs in there, kind of made a rudimentary scrambled eggs, and used the trowel to dish them out to everyone.
So you're saying that if anyone was to do this trek and you were to suggest like supplies to bring, it's utensils?
Just a lot of things you don't need utensils for. I also, I made us all these big Ziploc bags that were basically just full of trail mix. So, you know, it had granola and M&Ms and nuts and berries and raisins and all this stuff. So, and these big bags that were designed to last us the whole trip. We had one each, and I gave them to them at the start, and I'm like, this will last you the next week, so don't eat it all at once. I also had, do you guys have the cereal called Nutri-Grain?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
I just had an entire thing of Nutri-Grain, because you can eat it dry, and it gives you, you know, protein and energy and stuff and sugar. And Kerry loved that. He's munched on that the whole time. And then I had another big bag just full of chocolate bars, so we could be constantly eating chocolate to replenish energy, like it was Harry Potter. And I had one more thing. Oh, yeah. So I had all of that, and Chris and Kerry brought three Cliff Bars.
Three Cliff Bars. Let's go, bud.
I just never wanted all you need.
Are those like your always bring items on hikes? Like, especially if you're planning something really long, what are your like top list things that you have to have with, like, with supplies or gear?
In terms of food, granola, M&Ms, nuts and berries, because that'll take you far. As supplies, I suppose it really depends where you're going. I think something that I had that we never ended up using was we had water purifiers in case we needed to fill up our water in a stream or anything like that. And between, you know, Alex being able to fill up our water bottles and just asking people that we met, like, hey, can we steal some water off you? And I also, like, I knew a few places. Like, I knew there was a school along our route, so I planned to stop at the school and refill water there kind of thing. But, yeah, water and food are kind of the main things. Oh, we also, I also had thermals. At all times, I had thermals for all of us. The exception of day five, I always had at least one sleeping bag so that if we got cold, we could huddle together. I woke up underneath Chris one day. Yeah.
It's extra warm.
It was the middle of the night, and so we were sleeping on these sleeping mats, and there was, you know, me, Chris, Kerry, and there was maybe 6 inches of space between each of these sleeping mats. We were real huddled in there. And I guess at some point in the night, I'd kind of rolled over into the little gap between them. So my body was kind of wedged in the gap there. And then Chris had rolled over on top of me. And so I was just underneath him and I woke up with this weight on me. And I'm like, what's going on?
Hi, Chris.
It was like middle of the night, dark. And like, so I just kind of pushed him back away from me and then rolled back onto my sleep. He didn't even wake up. I told him about it the next day. No, I didn't even think I told him about it the next day. I told him about it 5 or 6 years later, and his response was, he just looked at me and goes, yeah, I like to cuddle. Yeah.
I'm a cuddler.
Yeah, you gotta watch out for us.
Yeah. Shout out to both Chris and Kerry, because they've both let me crash on their couch when I've been visiting Austin.
Oh, that's so nice.
So, you know, they've more than repaid me back for all the help I gave them in New Zealand.
We need to head to our last break here, folks, but stay tuned to Thunder Geeks, brought to you by 102.7 FM, CILU, or around the world at luradio.ca.
CILU is sponsored in part by the students of Lakehead University, our listeners, and our sponsors. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
The Foundry at 242 Red River Road, open 11 a.m. to 2 a.m. Monday to Saturday, featuring folk and Mondays, karaoke Tuesdays, trivia Wednesdays, open stage Thursdays, and live music weekends. Find out more at thefoundrypub.com. The Thunder Bay Symphony Orchestra. Log on to tbso.ca or call 626-TBSO for details on the 2019-2020 season and how to get tickets. The Lakehead University Student Union, promoting action, advocacy, and service by bringing you student centers. Learn more by visiting their office in the tunnels of the student center or by logging on to lusu.ca.
Where the floor is lava, we'll stay all weekend long. On the island, Queens, where the floor is lava. Or Buffy Marathon. Buffy Marathon. Buffy Marathon. Buffy Marathon. I know it seems like it's inside my house, and I know it looks like we're sitting on my couch, but I assure you, like Tahiti, it's a magical place. Even though we're surrounded by a scorching lava lake, on the island where the floor is lava, we'll watch the dude abide. On the island where the floor is lava, we've even got Wi-Fi. On the island where the floor is lava, and food comes to the door. On the island where the floor is lava, and we don't have two adults anymore.
And we're back. You're listening to Thunder Geeks, brought to you by 102.7 FM CILQ, or around the world at luradio.ca. That was Kraken Not Stirred. Where? That was Kraken Not Stirred with The Island Where the Floor is Lava. Now back to the show.
YouTube, you can actually look up, and it's something like Nick's toenail from A Simple Into Mortar or something like that. It made it to the special features of the DVD as well. Is it was 2 or 3 months later, I was lying in bed and my toenail like just felt weird. Like, that's the best way to describe it. It was still kind of, it was sort of, there was residual pain, and then just suddenly like the pain was just kind of gone, and it sort of felt a bit fuzzy. That's probably the best word. And I took off the covers and I looked down, and the toenail had just fallen off. It was like, it had just let go. Yeah, the toenail could be perfectly put back on where it was, and there was just another one growing underneath it. And so that one fell off, and then that wasn't purple anymore. And the other one, it just slowly grew out. Like, the time it takes for your toenail to completely grow out and replace is how long it took for that to go away. That toenail actually ended up in the Rooster Teeth Museum. I don't know how long they kept it for. Yeah, it was at RTX the next year.
RTX
also has my shoes as well. I don't know if they still have them, but at one point they had my shoes from the walk.
Just have your shoes and toenail.
Yeah.
Like, what did they do when they were like leaving for their flight? They're like, okay, Nick, nice to meet you, and then they just push you over and steal your shoes. Like,
it was years later when I was replacing them. I said to one of the art department people at the time, I was like, hey, I'm getting rid of my shoes from Simple Walk. Like, do you want them? Because, you know, they'd had my freaking toenail in the museum. And they're like, oh, yeah, sure. You know, if you're not doing anything with them, send them over. So I sent them my shoes. I have no idea if it still happened or not. Yeah.
Is there any, like, gear that is, like, your favorite gear? Like, are those your favorite brand of, like, hiking shoes or anything?
No, they were just sneakers.
I relate with this guy. Shoes is shoes.
Shoes is shoes.
Oh, you want to talk about having silly footwear? Earlier that year, like 2012, I said I'd been in America and then I'd gone traveling. One of the places I went to was New York, and I walked around multiple days the whole way around New York in jandals, which you call flip-flops. It is – I'd already broken them in, but it was a lot of walking on rubber jandals, and my feet were blistered and black at the end of each day. I had to, like, scrub them off.
Yeah.
New York's a dirty place.
Oh yeah. Like, I would wear flip flops just to avoid the rats. You know, don't give them something to bite first.
I remember walking into the CVS to get sticking plasters or band aids, you know, for my blisters, and just looking down at my feet and being like, man, my feet are so gross. And then I continued to do it day after day after day.
It's like, oh, not gonna buy shoes though. We're already committed to this.
Yeah. I mean, it was the end of summer. It was still pretty warm, and walking around Central Park, like, you know.
Yeah.
Because the trains there are expensive. So I was like, I'd catch one or two trains a day. The rest of it I can walk. Like, oh, I'm fine.
I got to know more about the museum toenail. Did they ask you? Did you offer? How did a toenail?
How does that come up?
Well, they already knew about it because I filmed it and put it on YouTube. And then they downloaded and put it on the DVD, and I think I might have offered and said, hey, do you want me to bring it over? I still have it, kind of thing. And so, yeah, I just I brought it over. I had it in this little medicine bottle. I brought it over to America and I gave it to Chris. And then the next time I wrote it was at RTX that year, like a few days later at RTX, because that was why I was over. And it was on display in like the RT Museum. And it was like Nick's toenail from A Simple Walk into Mordor. And then one of the guardians, her name's Jackie, had the unfortunate job of going and getting the toenail from the museum and bringing it to the panel. So I'm sorry, Jackie. I'm sorry for putting you through that.
I just one more toenail question, I swear, but did you take a selfie with it?
Oh, I don't remember. I don't think so, no. I may have taken like a thing of it. I think I took a photo of it with everything else.
You sound like you're fairly well traveled. Have you like gone on camping or nature hikes anywhere else?
The only other sort of hiking places I've done, like, you know, apart from normal touristy things, is Catalina Island, where I was working at a children's camp. There was a big part of that was we'd take the kids on hikes and would always try to be on like the toughest hike, which was called Eagles, which you basically walk across the mountains. And so cause it was beautiful and, you know, you're doing it with, you know, 13-year-olds. So it's pretty easy to keep up with them.
You say that.
Especially when I was 23.
Yeah. What's it like to go outside?
Thanks to COVID, I'm not sure right now.
Oh, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Aww. Is there any sort of, like, treks or like hikes that you would love to go on that you would like, that's like a goal of yours?
I want to go do the Marlborough Sounds back home. It's in the South Island. I haven't done a lot of the South Island stuff. My sister actually has done a lot of the stuff down the South Island because she went to university and studied, you know, I'm going to sound like a bad brother right now, but I can't actually remember exactly what the name of the course was, but it was basically like outdoor management, leadership, adventuring kind of thing. So she was actually the more well-versed one than I was in all of this stuff. And she was giving me advice. Yeah.
So if Chris and Carrie called you and said, hey, want to do A Simple Walk part two, would you do it?
Absolutely. There were talks about doing a sequel. There were some quite serious talks about doing a sequel. I helped come up with a few ideas. Unfortunately, they didn't pan out. Like, Carrie got pretty busy with Ruby and Chris got busy with all the live action stuff. But there were some serious talks about doing a sequel and we threw out quite a few ideas. And I would love to do it again. You know, if people want to see it, like talk to Rooster Teeth, because I think we had some good ideas for a sequel and what we'd do and how we would take it to that next level. Because the first one was very like, not a huge amount of planning, not a huge amount of production put into it. Like it was just three guys and a camera.
See if you can do it.
Yeah. The sequels that we had planned were very much more like, okay, let's see how we can take this up a notch.
Yeah. You can take more inspiration from the movies to have like obstacles and stuff as well.
Yeah. We wouldn't do the same movie again.
Oh, did you have an idea for like a different route, like different locations?
Oh yes, very different locations.
Ooh.
Ooh. So there is more. So there's the mountain, and then there's the Shire. Mm-hmm. Is there any other like landmarks or like attractions that you wanted to showcase, or you would like to like? From like the movie, I guess.
Yes, but not in a simple walk. Like it's just not feasible because of where they are. Like a lot of the locations are in the South Island. There are other locations in the North Island, but they're just so far away. Like, you know, hours and hours and hours and hours of driving, let alone walking. But the Rivendell is really pretty. You know, obviously most of it's digital, most of it's sets that are now gone, but the actual location for Rivendell, that's really pretty. I've been there. The Gollum's stream, you know where Faramir is going to kill Gollum?
Yes.
And he's like, yes. In the stream with the fish. Like, that's really pretty. Extremely scary. Do not go to the top of that cliff. And I am speaking from experience there. Do not stand on the top of that cliff. Stay where you're supposed to stay. You can see it plenty fine for where you're supposed to be. It is a little bit of view if you go beyond the barriers, but stay where you're supposed to be. Yeah, that's on Ruapehu as well. Yeah, but also, like, Lord of the Rings does a really good job of showing off New Zealand scenery. And so I don't feel the need to show it off. Like, I think at some point I'm going to get out my drone and go down the South Island and just film a bunch of drone footage down there and just upload it, because I think it's really pretty. But I mean, you guys are from Canada, so you probably have the same, you know.
Yeah, we have some majesty when we look out into the fort. We joke about our big hill, but Mount McKay is pretty in the winter when it has the snow on it.
Do you guys have snow at the moment?
Yes, it has snowed.
It melted, but it is still cold enough that it can snow at any point.
It's like slush right now. Like, there's a thin layer of weird ice slush outside.
I actually have snow out where I am.
Well, you're out in the sticks.
Yeah, I don't have a choice.
Oh, okay. So, you have snow, so there's snow in the forests?
There's a bit, yeah.
You have more than us right now, I think. Yep. Granted, I haven't looked outside today.
Rural areas always get a lot more snow than in the city, which is just because of the pollution. It just melts a lot faster. what was I going to say? Yeah, when you were...
Oh, fire away.
If I were to visit Thunder Bay when COVID's done, what would be a thing to do there?
The Sleeping Giants. Like the scenery from there. I know Kyle hates it, and stereotypical as heck, but the genuine like scenery when you leave the city?
So for us, when you look out on the bay, there's this big rock formation out there that has a lot of mythology behind it, because it looks like a giant person lying in the bay that's just this rock. So you can actually climb up onto that and go and camp out there. It is beautiful out there. We have the mountain behind us as well. We have just a lot of like nature forest hiking stuff.
Yeah.
I was going to say like Silver Island's there. We have... Terry Fox's monument.
Yes.
Oh yeah, Terry Fox.
Even if you wanted to come to Thunder Bay, like I would suggest maybe in the summertime or like just before it starts getting a little too warm. Well, you know what? You're probably used to the warm anyways. So disregard that because you're used to the warm. But if you come during the summertime, you can actually go and enjoy and a mine for amethyst if you want. You can go to our random amethyst mines here locally and dig for your own amethyst. And I think that that's one of the best things that you can get like from our area. It was like the best souvenir is like digging for your own pretty shiny purple rocks.
It's a gem.
One of the main things we're known for is actually related to walking. It was, his name was Terry Fox. He tried to do a marathon across Canada, raising money for cancer, and he did it with one leg. Thunder Bay is where he stopped.
This is where he passed.
We're the city that killed the Marathon of Hope. He died just out of Thunder Bay. He got to Thunder Bay and went, nah, I'm done.
We're done here.
It's kind of bittersweet.
Tons. And every year we have a marathon in his honor.
He's literally like a local legend. Not local, but he's like a Canadian
national icon.
Yeah, national Canadian icon for doing what he did.
I think he's on the loony.
He was for a while.
Yeah.
We put him on the loony for a while, yeah.
I'm trying to think of other things.
I never get rid of my change whenever I leave a country. So I always have. I have a loony.
Oh!
You have a loony.
You have more money than I do.
Oh, we're all laughing. He's not kidding.
No, not at all. So there's other things. Like Lake Superior itself is
nice. It's bigger than some seas.
Yeah, just it's cold.
Yeah, a lot of people will stop into Thunder Bay before they'll go up into their campsite as well. So like I said, you walk a half hour outside the city, it is forest, like in 8 hours in every direction, just forest.
Well, I'll come up when COVID's over and you guys can show me around.
Deal.
Definitely.
Now, one thing we love to do on Thunder Geeks is we love to play games. So we're gonna have some fun questions here.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple. All we do is we give you usually this or that. If you could ride any giant animal into battle, what would it be?
Okay. Eagle.
Are you a lover or a fighter?
Lover, easily.
Marvel or DC?
Can I give an addendum to this?
Yes.
Marvel live action, DC animated.
Oh.
Star Wars. Very good.
Your answer.
Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Wars.
Would you rather be eaten by a horde of gerbils or a flock of ducks?
Horde of gerbils.
Tacos or pizza?
Tacos.
Pirates or ninjas?
Ninjas. But pirates, you got to deal with scurvy.
Burned to death or frozen to death?
Frozen to death, because if you get hypothermia, you just go to sleep.
Would you rather pilot a giant robot or be a giant robot?
Pilot one, because I watched Rusty and the Big Guy as a kid, and I love that cartoon.
Pancakes or waffles?
Pancakes. Easy. You can add way more toppings.
Star Trek holodeck or Matrix headjack?
Okay. This is really hard.
I know, it's the tough questions.
if I have the Matrix one, do I have all the powers of Neo?
Yeah, you can know Kung Fu.
Can I fly?
I mean, it's the Matrix.
Yeah.
I would do Matrix if I get to be the one.
Would you rather wipe with sandpaper or poison ivy?
Oh my god. It's awful. Sandpaper, because there's no lingering effects, I guess.
Wait.
Do I have isopropyl alcohol on me? Because then poison ivy, but immediately...
Oh, that's up to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if you want to put alcohol on there, that's fun.
You could also put sandpaper around.
I know my deadly plants.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
And most important question, who has the better booty? Peter Parker, Spider-Man, or Dick Grayson, Nightwing?
I'm going to say Dick Grayson.
Nice.
Awesome.
Before Andrew, you ended, Dick. There's one new question I added.
Okay.
What animal do you think looks funniest in people's shoes?
I haven't seen a lot of animals in people's shoes, but I have seen a dog in shoes, and the way they walk when they're in shoes is freaking hilarious, and you can't not laugh, because they kind of do the splay thing because they're trying to kick them off.
That's how I imagine a giraffe in high heels would look, but just gianter.
I've got one for you. If you were from Lord of the Rings Middle Earth, where would you be from?
You know, I'd probably be a Shire folk, because I love to eat. I'm very hairy.
I feel that.
Yeah, and, you know, I look after people. I think I was definitely the Samwise of the trip. I like to think I'd be Aragorn with my long flowing locks, but yeah, I'm probably more the Samwise than Aragorn.
The one who carried the whole series, eh?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Definitely a mix of both, I would agree.
And our most difficult question, is a hot dog a sandwich?
No, a hot dog is a taco.
Yes! Yes! Red taco!
Yeah! I can't wait!
You're the first one to get it right on the first try.
It's open at the top.
Yeah. I've been pushing bread taco for who knows how long.
I've always said I've come to the conclusion that a hot dog is also in the same category as chili, because chili is not a soup technically. And it's not a stew. So hot dogs and chili are in the same food group. That's why they go so well together.
I think chili is a goulash.
Ooh.
Oh, hey, that's something to think about. Hey.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I want to do, if I can ever get funding. Hey, this is something I could plug. Give me money.
Plug anything you want here before we wrap up the thing. Where can folks find you and anything you want to talk about?
What I was just going to say was something I want to do sometime in my lifetime is basically just eat my way through different countries and just, you know, basically do like a documentary of me just going and eating really good food from different countries, because I've traveled quite a bit and I love all the different food from different places. Like, for instance, poutine. Love me some Canadian poutine. I didn't think I would enjoy it as much as I did. Like, I know I like chips and I know I like gravy. Sorry, fries. But the adding of the cheese curds was a real thing that I didn't know if I was going to enjoy or not, and it is amazing.
Everyone knows. Everyone loves it.
A lot of people approach it at first, like, for us, since we grew up with it, we're like, well, you like cheese, you like fries, and you like gravy. You just put it all together, and trust me, it works. Thunder Bay, we do have a special food. We have something known as the Persian, where it is more of a doughy cinnamon roll with this raspberry icing on top of it.
It's just a donut!
But the best way to do it, though, Kyle, is you cut it horizontally, you butter it, you fry it, and you put it back together. It's delicious.
It sounds like a hottest.
Yeah.
They're usually big too, like face size monstrosities.
quite delicious monstrosities.
They're good, but they're just donuts.
If you ever make it to Thunder Bay, we will. This will be the reward after a trek. I will definitely come up. Face full of Persian.
Yeah, as where people can find me, I'm in most places. I'm NickNewton07. You know what? I'm just going to double check that because I'm not even 100% sure about my own. Yeah, I'm NickNewton07 on Twitter, and I believe I'm the same on Instagram. I really don't post all that often. Yeah, NickNewton07 on Instagram as well, if you feel like following me. And if you have a feature film that needs an editor, I'd really like to do one that actually gets released.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Oh, heads up.
Let's go point him at Hayden J. Canada.
Yeah, there you go. Point him at Hayden.
Yeah, we'll point you at Hayden because we were, as we were saying, I think about a month ago, we were interviewing an independent filmmaker that's in New Zealand right now, actually working on a film about tramping. So it's nice. A loop track. But we are going to wrap up the show here, folks. Nick, I want to thank you so much for joining us once again.
You're welcome.
Of course, if you want to continue the conversation online, you can do so on our Facebook page at facebook.com/ThunderGeekSpeak or follow us on our other social media on Twitter and Instagram. Of course, Rob, let's plug your paints again because I eventually want to get into my theory about your new inspiration of fat Pokemon at Rob's Quarantine Paint. And Kyle and Chris have been streaming on their respective Twitch pages, twitch.tv/FrozenFire727 or Chris the Tripod. And once again, we have been your lovely Thunder Geeks, brought to you by 102.7 FM CILU or around the world at luradio.ca. I'm Andrew.
I'm Rob.
I'm Megan.
I'm Kyle.
And I'm Chris.
And we're your Thunder Geeks.
And we're your Thunder Geeks.
We'll see you next week.
My name is Nevaeh. I lost my foot in a lawnmower accident. Now I teach other children how to play safe. Kids shouldn't play near lawnmowers. Lawnmowers are very loud. The driver wouldn't be able to hear you if you were playing anywhere near. It's very important to be cautious.
Whatever game you play, stay safe. A message from the War Amps. Learn more at waramps.ca.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you have traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others.